ladies and gentlemen, around the Delaware Valley. Welcome to the McMenamin and Wing Show here on WWDB Talk 860. We have an awesome show. We have our host, Tom Wing, in the house. How are you, Tom?
I'm doing great. How you doing, Joe?
Cannot complain. Always look forward to this show. A lot's going on with the show. You repurpose this show. Not only does the Delaware Valley get to listen, but you are almost a celebrity, on social media, and you do a great job. I have seen myself in some of them clips.
Well, that's what made them go viral.
I realize that. That's my point. Okay. I know things were going well. Reminds me of when the governor ran. Okay. And, we did a show with him. It was close, the election, and boom, they put him over the top. So here it's kind of like the same, you and the governor.
That's why they call you the closer.
That's right. I am the closer. Speaking of closers, we have an awesome guest that's going to be on the program. Hasn't been on in a while, but great to have Matthew Solomon. In the house from Solomon, Dion, and Solomon, and Shapiro. How are you, sir?
Good, Joe. Good to see you. How are you?
Well, I'm not as good as you. And the last time we had you on a show, you were about to be a father, and now you are a full-blown father, 13 months. Your son's 13 months old, correct?
That's correct. It's my second child. So, yeah, I've lost a lot of sleep over many years now.
Oh, my
I've
God.
Joined all of us.
You mean you've had two children since we've?
I had a child before.
Oh, okay.
And that was my second.
Oh, okay. Well, fantastic. You know, certainly I get the sleep thing, and I know you're, shout out to your wife. I know it'd be nice if she let you, if she took, gave you a break in the middle of the night and woke up with the little ones, but that's just kidding. I always say, so we have a lot of young people and then they, in around our, cul-de-sac there. They're in their 30s, they have their first, little one, and I'll say, "How you guys doing? Congratulations!" But then I'll look at the guy who I know. What's really important is how you're doing. How are you? Is she helping you at all? Right, and that's when I got to run up the street. So that's great news, and there's nothing like that. You can describe it to. By the way, you're gonna have. Is that it too?
Two boys. I'm good.
Two boys? How about that? Could get a full backfield.
Both of them could throw the ball far enough. Totally good.
We need a couple new umpires, though.
Just want to say he's running the run and shoot offense. He's already got enough. You already have a full backfield. Yeah, we talk a little bit of sports. You mentioned Angel Hernandez, okay? Listen, you know I'm a union guy, but there are certain things that unions should stay out of. But the umpire, somebody like that who was just out of control, he must be, really leveraged in.
I mean, there's a reason all those videos are going viral, right? I mean, it's bad. People who don't know baseball know it's bad.
You know, what's interesting. Did you see the Yankees game yesterday? Did you see, Aaron Boone get thrown out of the game?
For nothing? Yeah, I saw that.
Because on TikTok, they have it broken down.
Oh, they have it zoomed in. He's just sitting there minding his own business. That's it. You're out of here. Are you kidding me?
and it's not unusual. So Aaron Boone has been thrown out of more games than like anybody, any manager, in recent times.
But at least they got him the one time he wasn't doing anything.
Incredible.
Right?
So I love, since you are, such a high profile on social media, on TikTok and Reels and all those things, and I do love what you do. It's really, it's really great stuff. But while you're watching that, okay, because I get the social media of your social medias. I get animals and I get sports, right? That's typically, I guess that's what my algorithm is. And I get, you heard of Earl Weaver, right? Like Earl Weaver was the coach of the Baltimore Orioles and he was about 5'3" and he got thrown out. And literally they create an entire show. It's awesome. Not since, and it's probably the 80s, when he retired. He's in the Hall of Fame. But not since then has a manager gotten thrown out more than Aaron Boone, right? But that absolute debacle where that umpire, so Matt, let me just say this. I don't know if you're a baseball guy or not, but it doesn't really matter because, you know, the Yankees manager, Aaron Boone, has always arguing with the umpires, right?
Correct.
Well, he has a little argument, right? And the umpire, you know, says to him, you know, any more, you know, you're going out. They're six pitches into the game, okay? They're already, however, the umpire turns, looks at the pitcher, and you couldn't see it, obviously, if you were watching the game, but somebody got it on video, and so therefore it's on social media, where they kind of have a double pen. They have, you know, a dual focus. So you're looking at Aaron Boone. He's looking at he's just looking down, you know, chewing his seeds, and you see the guy behind him in the stand saying something. The umpire doesn't even look. He just turns around and goes, "You're out of here." He's talking to Aaron Boone.
All right, he's shouting back, "It wasn't me." It was somebody that says, "I don't care.
I don't care.
You're gone.
I don't care who it is." And, you know, I bet, you know, that one there is going to change the game. That literally, something's going to happen there. Like, an umpire's going to not be able to throw anybody out unless you're looking directly. Yeah, that's a really tough one.
Yeah.
You know.
But, you know, it's funny. We can segue right into this, into the reputation of lawyers in front of judges, because it kind of works the same way. I don't think he would have gotten that treatment had he not been thrown out of dozens of games before this, right?
It's an interesting point you make. You're both in front of judges. It's a great segue. That's why you're the pro, Tom. That's why. Do you see that? Matt, Tom and I talked about that all night. He said to me, "Look, you go into the umpire thing, then I'll just segue." Not that. So I can imagine when you're in front of judges, because you're both in front of judges, okay? You know, you ever see, does it happen in both of your worlds where there's a dispute, or, you know, does a lawyer ever, even though you're representing a client, have you ever seen a interaction where it was argumentative between a judge and an attorney? I'll go Matt first.
I think
besides you, Matt,
it happens a lot. People don't really understand how much it actually happens sometimes. I mean, I've been in front of judges where the judge doesn't like the argument that I'm making, and he may make his own ruling. But if I want to stick up for the client and say, "Well, I don't think that's right. I think that's because of X, Y, and Z," the next time I'm in front of that judge, he's coming at me. He's treating me like I've stolen something out of his own house.
Wow.
It happens. And sometimes there's judges who take it personally. And some judges look at it and say, you know what? This attorney is advocating for their client. That's today. Tomorrow's a new day. So it happens a lot.
Wow. I'll take that even a step further. That definitely happens, and I've seen, and you know, when you do this, as long as we've done this, you know who the judges are. They're going to take it personally. You kind of tread lightly. But there are also lawyers that are just known for being outlandish. Every motion that they can possibly make, every fight that they can pick is the biggest fight of their career. They don't know when to pick their battles, and they have a reputation for it. And the judges kind of take what they have to say with a grain of salt. You want deference from a judge. You want a judge to listen to your argument, consider it, and make a fair ruling. You don't want the judge thinking in the back of their head, "Oh, about the 10 other ridiculous arguments this lawyer has made in the last week." That does happen.
It's a great point, advocating for your client, okay, in front of a judge. In your world, Tom, you're only in front of a judge. So in other words, you don't have the jury to bail you out. And so having that consciousness and understanding that, in a sense, you would think it would come naturally, but we've all seen situations in life where somebody can't let go of baggage they had in the fourth grade when Sister Jane, you know, came back at them, and now all of a sudden, you know, everybody else is going to take the brunt of it. But when you're representing a client, what's your responsibility when it comes to navigating when you know, and I hate to say this, but when you know the judge is not correct, I was going to say wrong, but let's say not correct, and at the same time, making your point, doing it respectfully so that it bodes well for your client?
Routinely, I'll apologize to the court. You know, "Your Honor, I'm sorry. I just need to preserve my record. I need to make my record, and then I will state succinctly the legal basis on which I've made my argument, and then I'll let the judge make the ruling. We'll take it up on appeal." If you try to push too hard, yeah. I mean, frankly, in the court of common pleas, you end up in contempt, right? We don't have that in workers' comp, but you're certainly going to get yelled at. It can get referred to the director. It's just not worth it.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. How do you handle that, Matt?
I mean, I think kind of depends on the context of where you're at. If you're in motion court and you're arguing a motion, something germane, it happens, and you say, as Tom did, you know, Your Honor, I'm sorry, but I want to preserve this record, because you do want to make a record sometimes. And then if you're in a situation where you're in front of a jury and you're doing a jury trial, and you know the judge made the wrong ruling, you have to make sure that you say, Your Honor, I want to preserve the record. You still have to make your arguments. But at the same time, when you're presenting to a jury, the jury can kind of see it. They can see your body language, your emotions, how you're walking around the courtroom. And sometimes the jurors can kind of, they can understand that not only is the plaintiff fighting against the defendant, but they're also fighting a little bit against the judge.
Yeah.
And that can work to your favor sometimes, depending on the case. And you have to use it in the right way. But there's been situations where I've been in, I remember a trial that I had, judge was not right on certain things. And was letting in more evidence than should have been let in. At the end of the day, it didn't matter because the jury saw who we were going against.
But in your world, when it comes to an appeal, do you have to point that out? In other words, at least so you know in the future, if you see something that you think is an appealable offense and the judge made it, like how do you handle that, or do you just make notes?
You have to make sure there's a record created of it.
Yeah.
And when you file your appeal, you have to make sure that it's part of your appeal. If you don't include that in your appeal, you waive that argument. But it's most importantly, at the end of the day, you have to have that included with your appeal.
Since we're talking about the baseball analogies, I it's funny how some of these catchers, you hear some of the stories, and you hear them a lot on social media. You know, where when an umpire, you know, is making bad calls or something like that, you know, when he's, you know, calling strikes that are balls, when you hear the batter, this is when they get thrown out. Go, what, do you got an early tee time today?
Look, when the catcher's all the way down here.
right.
We're pretty sure it's a ball. Like, right. We don't need the umpire right. for that.
When you're arguing in representing your client, and I'm going to make this point that I'm going to have, obviously, everybody introduce themselves. But when I'm sure you've seen as much as you guys have seen, okay, on behalf of your clients, what is it like? And I would assume that it's an awesome favor when you're up against, for example, a defense attorney that's a little prickly, and to say the least, and you know, your job, Matt, is obviously, you know, you want to be able to get along with the judge, and you want to be able to, you know, but you also want the jury to like you in the case. But what's it like, and when you're arguing on behalf of your client, and you have somebody, and they may be young or whatever, they just can't get out of their own way. You just let them hang themselves, for lack of a better term.
Good.
I think it always depends on the client. You have to, whatever you do, you have to make sure that you show whoever you're arguing to, whether a jury or a judge, that you not only care about your client, but you support your client, and that if your client makes a mistake, you own up to that. You don't let that sit out there. You don't let it, if your client by accidentally says something that's wrong.
But I'm talking about the defense attorney. Who's and you're going up against that person. The two of you are extremely successful. Matt, we've done a couple shows together. I can't imagine. I know you've gotten carried out of several courtrooms, but that's not important right now. We'll talk about that later. Just kidding. But what's it like when you're up against somebody who just doesn't have that feel and really is argumentative and prickly in front of the jury?
You let them have their day.
Exactly what I was going to say.
You let them have their day.
Does that happen in work comp court?
Oh, yeah. And you let them make their argument. You let them make that judge 15 minutes late for their next hearing, because who am I? I'm not the judge. It's not my job to police the defense attorney. The insurance company picked their guy. And if their guy is, you know.
Do you learn from that also and say, like, in other words, sit there and go, okay, here's, you know, you learn from people who have mentored you and successfully, like, you know, shout out to Roger McMenamin. But let me just say, at the same time, you might learn from somebody who, you know, might sit there and go, you know what? Let me make a mental note of that one. Don't go in that direction. I mean, you learn as much from somebody that does that than
Yeah, I mean, in workers' comp, for sure, the bar is very small. Your reputation is really important. A lot of the attorneys you practice with will become judges at some point because you got to be a judge for 5 years in workers' comp before you can even be considered to become a judge.
Oh, you mean you got to be a prosecutor or defense attorney?
You got to work somewhere in workers' comp, either do what I do, working for injured workers, or you have to work at a defense firm. You have to do that for 5 years before you can even apply to be a workers' comp judge. You can't just come in off the street or run in an election. All of those positions are appointed. And so you should be pleasant to your colleagues. You know, argue for your clients.
That's a great point.
You know, you should be zealous. You should do your job, but don't be a jerk. Because the person you're a jerk to may well be a judge deciding your cases 10 years from now.
That's a great point. In your world, Matt, I've heard a lot of stories where firm owners have actually recruited, individuals on the other side because they saw somebody that could, was talented. But at the same time, having that mutual respect, does that typically, does that bode better for a case, the flow of a case, the flow of a trial?
I mean, obviously any case where you have a good relationship with the other side, the case is just going to move way more smoothly than it would otherwise. There are certain attorneys, no matter what, they are the biggest cactus you can find in Arizona. You are going, no matter what you do, you're getting pricked by that plant. But then there's plenty of other attorneys who have either A, mellowed out over the years, or know that at the end of the day, it's not their really decision is what's happening. It's someone at an insurance company going to make that decision. And they're going to work with you to try to get the case resolved or where it needs to go.
Yeah, I'm going to write that one down. The biggest cactus in Arizona. I like that. Guys, let's do this. Tom, if you would, remind our listeners, obviously, about yourself and the practice.
Sure. I'm Tom Wing. I'm a workers' comp lawyer. Our main office is in Jenkintown, although we cover the entire state of Pennsylvania. We recently opened a Pittsburgh office. I don't know if that was official when we were here last.
Wow. So how about that?
We are now statewide.
Fantastic. And if you would, Matt, a little bit about yourself and the firm.
Sure. My name is Matthew Solomon. I am at Dion Solomon Shapiro. Our office is in Philadelphia. We practice mainly in the Philadelphia region, but we do handle cases all over the state. Our primary area of focus is personal injury. So whether it be a car accident, rideshare accident, slip and fall, trip and fall, ceiling collapse. We also handle a lot of abuse cases. And some medical negligence cases as well.
Okay, and did you say, I apologize, Pennsylvania and New Jersey? Or
yes, yeah, so we handle Pennsylvania and we do also handle New Jersey as well.
Okay, and so I like to cover this because I think this is important. We talked about it, the contingency fee agreement. So if anybody's listening and thinking that they can't afford to hire, hotshot attorneys like you guys, that's, nothing could be further from the truth, right?
That is correct. We only get paid as long as we recover money for our clients.
So no out-of-pocket costs walking in.
Correct. No out-of-pockets.
Tom?
I have never sent a client a bill. Not ever. So they sign their name on the dotted line. We go to work for them. And whether there's a recovery or not, they get 100% from us. And we take a percentage of the recovery. If that number is zero, they pay nothing.
So let's talk about vetting cases, okay? One of the things, especially everybody's a dinner table attorney, and everybody thinks that they have a case, okay, and they may, okay, but before you can accept a case, you have to vet it to make sure that it is actually a case. You talk about different types of personal injury cases, okay. And sometimes when you vet a case, that is, you have to actually put money out of your pocket just to, so when we talk about the contingency fee agreement and no out-of-pocket costs for a client, okay, that goes, obviously for the consultation, initial but that also goes towards, when you're actually vetting a case to see if you're going to be, if there is a case there and if you're going to accept it. Let's talk about a high maintenance type of vetting a case. A case comes in, I mean, give me an example of some of the areas of, I think you talked about, would you say sexual assault cases?
Yeah.
Okay, and those are civil sexual assault cases, which can be very incredibly emotional, which says something about the firm. Okay, how do you go about somebody, you know, so that process, I'll jump in on, you know, so for example, a lot of these organizations, you know, no secret, the Glenn Mills, you know, Boy Scouts, Catholic Church, you know, organizational type stuff, or, you know, or you look at the Jerry Sandusky situations or the Larry Nassar situation, where, you know, the organization or a parking lot at a nightclub where it's dark and there's no light, somebody gets assaulted, but because of the lack, the negligence due to the organization or property owner, somebody was put into a situation where they got sexually assaulted. Okay, that, okay, and I always wondered when I heard about them, there's a criminal element. That's not what we're talking about with you. You're talking about the civil element.
Correct. We're only talking about a civil element of it. And an investigation to something such as horrible or heinous as that, it really starts with the client. When you talk to these clients, you can tell a lot of the time how, just by the emotion they give, the way they describe what had happened. And a lot of times it's very difficult for the client to do that. But especially in a lot of, when there's a child involved, the investigation is a little bit different because usually there is, the state is called, police are called, there's it's called child line is called. Basically, youth services come out and do an investigation. So there's a little bit less investigation that has to be done at the initial onset when there's a child involved. Adults a little bit different because you have to see, well, were the police who called? Was there video? There's a lot of different things that go into those initial investigations. But it really kind of starts with the client and how they describe and act when those cases first come in. And especially as a male attorney, you have to be very careful of how you have those conversations, especially with a female victim.
Yes.
Or a child. Because unfortunately, a lot of the sexual assaults that we do see with children happen to be male abusers.
Yeah.
So it's always important, at least in my mind, especially if you have a child or someone else, that if there's another loved one in the room or a loved one available who has an idea about the abuse or heard about it, to be part of that conversation.
The big part of what I was talking about too, the fact that you just brought that up, the sensitivity, okay, of you know, and being prepared and being aware of that as a firm, okay, in my opinion, is the absolute first step. Like whoever's answering that phone, talk about that. In other words, somebody's listening right now, they've gone through something. And this may be different for an adult, and it probably is, even an adult male who may have been molested when they were younger or whatever, you know. The point is, making that phone call is, you know, but for an adult, but let's go either way, it doesn't matter. But the point is, talk about, you know, what they can expect when they call your firm and that person answers the phone, privacy, confidentiality, sensitivity, talk about that.
Right. The thing that sets my firm apart than a lot of other firms, especially all these TV firms that you see, lawyers handle their case from start to finish. We don't have an intake team. The lawyers in our firm, we are the intake team. So when you call my firm and you have a new case or you want to talk to someone about a sensitive subject, you're not going to be put on the phone with a staff who's just trained. You're going to be put on the phone with a lawyer who's probably going to handle your case. And we have the specialized knowledge and ability to handle these clients is because we do it from the start to the finish. And I think that's important, especially in abuse cases and abuse situations, because a lot of the time, you know, you may call one of these big firms and you're going to get someone on the phone who has a list of questions on a piece of paper or a computer, yeah, and it's going to go check, 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 check. That's not what we do. When someone comes in with this, a situation like this, it's important, one, to establish who you are and how you're going to get that conversation going, whether they only want to talk on the phone or whether they want to come into your office in person. And a lot of the time, it's really important just to have that first initial call with the client and approach the subject the best you can and then say, hey, listen, I think this is important. Why don't you come in and meet with me tomorrow?
Absolutely.
Why don't you come in and meet with myself and one of the other partners tomorrow? And let's talk about this in person. And I think that goes a long way, especially in these sensitive situations with a lot of these clients.
Matt's not going to say it, but what he just said is what's called empathy.
Absolutely.
And what these billboard lawyers don't have is empathy, trying to understand where this client is coming from, what they've gone through, and how you can help them. And it's really important when you're picking a lawyer to have someone that has empathy.
Absolutely. And personalize, you know, the situation, have an empathy, even to the point of asking questions. Okay, we've all heard the nightmares. Okay, law enforcement years ago, when somebody was a woman was afraid to report a sexual assault. Okay, now people want to get information, but even, you know, like you said, Matt, having an attorney at the firm that has, and being cognitive of, you know, if it's a male or female. It can't be easy no matter what. I have said this, and Tom, we have talked about this. In your world, okay, one, you know, so they never teach the business of law, number one, but they also can't teach empathy and the way to deliver a question. I'm sure that when people make decisions on what type of law firm they have, you know, they look into all kinds of things, you know, whether if it's viable, you know, whatever. Point I'm making is, but if this is an area of the law that you're practicing in that room, okay, you're dealing with something that's heavier than anything you could have ever imagined at law school. However, you're the one, and obviously, in Tom, and you're dealing with a family that comes in who lost somebody on a job or somebody who lost a limb or whatever. It's really, in many ways, you know, what separates, you know, the really great firms from somebody who, well, it's part of the business of law, which means if you're abrasive or just going through motions, you're not gonna be able to maintain clients for real long. But in this particular area, what's that process like, Matt, when you're actually asking those questions? You've done it for a long time now.
Right, we have to remember that while we're lawyers, but we also have a business. But at the end of the day, our clients are our business.
Right, it's personal.
It's all about how you act with them, react with them, talk to them on a personal level, see how they're doing, how their day is going, how their family is. It's important to be as friendly as you can with your clients because they're part of our business too. We are nothing without our clients. And a vast majority of our clients that come in every year are from our former clients because they know we care about our clients.
Right.
We take the time to understand our clients and spend time with them. But getting back to the question, law school doesn't teach you this. No courses really can teach you this. It's all about who you are as a person. You have to have a certain just mindset going into when you speak to someone about something as horrible and heinous as sexual abuse. That
oh my God.
You just have to let them speak, and you have to just let them know that you understand that I will never understand what happened to you, but I will do everything I can to help you, to let you tell your story, and to be there for you in any way we possibly can. And a lot of the times, and I know we actually talked about this, I think about a couple of years ago when I was on your show with this large sexual abuse case we're involved in. Some of these men, the first time they're telling somebody about the abuse is coming in to talk to their lawyer. And that's very common, and that's how a lot of this is. It's all about spending time face-to-face with the client and letting them see and understand that you not only care about them and you care about what they say, but that you are there to help them in any way possible.
What a lot of people may not understand, Joe, is that a lot of times a lawyer isn't just that person on a billboard that's going to get them paid or whatever. I mean, that's how we're portrayed in sort of popular media, right? A lot of times a lawyer is a lifeline for someone. We're the last resort. They tried to fix this on their own. They went to a doctor. They talked to a psychologist. And this is the end of the road.
Well, it's amazing because finding the right individual to, I can imagine how daunting it gets. And that's why our broadcasts, and even the podcast after the broadcast, one of the things that people, you know, they get to understand the individual that they're having to represent them. Okay, finding an attorney in any situation is, you know, likely one of the most important situations you're ever going to have in your life. Because if you've had to go that far, you're going through something. But when you're in a life situation like this, okay, having the empathy to know that what I love about what you guys do is you're not only seeking justice for that individual, you are, but you're also trying to make sure it doesn't happen to anybody else.
That's correct.
Okay, and I'll break that down to the simplest form. Okay, I owned a nightclub. Nobody, my partners didn't want to put a security guard at that back door. It cost more money, right? Maybe I didn't. So somebody snuck in that door and assaulted somebody. Now we got to do it. Well, my point is, it cost us a lot of money for what I'm, you know, so I hate to say it, but a lot of times, so you can bet your butt that there'll never be another, our facility won't be open on a much lower level. Okay, this takes it, but it's still the same principle. You know, you hit somebody where it counts, and now all of a sudden, you know, other people won't have to suffer that same fate. And in a sense, it's human nature, but that's what you do, and that's what I love what you do. Tom, let me ask you a question in regards to kind of this situation. Somebody's working on a job. They have it. There was an individual working for a company driving a bus. Somebody got shot. It was a homicide on the bus. That individual knew, you know, I mean, is now a witness, okay, and got assaulted on the way out when the individual was leaving, okay? Or imagine that bus driver or that employee got sexually assaulted, okay? They're physically okay. They've got no broken bones, but emotionally they're absolutely shot. So let's look at it, you know, parallels to a work injury.
Sure.
What is that? You know.
So, I mean, it's certainly a workers' comp claim. In both the hypotheticals you gave, one, they're physically assaulted, and then the other is there's really a physical abuse, or a physical abuse which results in a mental.
But it
component.
Was the mental, right? Well, right. They were worried because they knew the person who actually committed the homicide was a regular on the bus. And they know that they just got pushed out of the way. It wasn't, you know. But still, you know, you're talking, and I'm going to throw one more thing in there. As a bus driver, okay, don't they have things that happen in your normal course of business and stuff like that? Throw that in there also.
Yeah, I think no reasonable person is going to think that any of your hypothetical is a reasonable risk that they could just expect to have happen to them as a bus driver. I mean, they don't pay them nearly enough, right?
Right.
So I think that's not really going to be the issue. The biggest thing with mental claims is really what you're talking about. Yeah. Is they are sometimes harder to prove, but there are experts, right? You can go see a psychiatrist or a psychologist. You can document that. There are things that these clinicians look for to make objective diagnoses based on their experience, and we do file these claims.
So is there imagine if it was a nightclub situation and the owner of the nightclub did not have enough security, okay? If there was a sexual assault by an employee there, okay, and we've talked about third-party cases a lot on this program, normally it's a more standardized situation. Someone's driving for a living and somebody T-bones them, right? But now we're talking sexual assault and somebody works in a restaurant, okay, and that woman or male is walking to their car. There's no security outside. It's dark. They get sexually assaulted. Is that a workers' compensation? Well,
it can be, but as I'm listening to your hypothetical, I'm looking for all the exceptions.
Well,
so what you're touching on here is you're kind of playing with the edge of the exclusive remedy of workers' comp, meaning you can't generally sue your employer for a work injury, but there are a number of exceptions, and security might be actually one of those. So
okay.
let's say. Your servers, your staff, the people that are working in your nightclub are working under you, but you have an outside security company come in and they're supposed to be patrolling that parking lot. You got a guy on each door.
Right.
Well, guess what? That's when we bring Matt in.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Let's just change a couple of the facts. Somebody's working at a facility in a mall, okay, at a restaurant, okay? It's a big parking lot. Okay. It's lunchtime or whatever they got, or they have to go out to their car to get something. They get sexually assaulted. okay? Can that be a third party case? You know, it, like you said, as you know, you have a third party, the landlord probably responsible for, you know, the parking lot. What do you think, Matt?
I mean, it can be. It all depends on the responsibility of the people in charge of the property, the person who was injured, their relationship to the property. I mean, if it's a place of business where the person works for the owner of the who owns the land and they also have their own security guards, that makes it a little more difficult. But if it's the owner of the land hires a third-party company, like any of these security companies,
sure.
And the security company doesn't do their job or they were missing or whatever reason, then yes, the claim would be against that the security company. I think something a lot of people have a difficult time just understanding is it's very difficult to bring a claim when someone is injured by intentional acts such as shooting somebody or getting sexually assaulted, the actual perpetrator. It's very difficult right. to bring a claim against a perpetrator. One,
they're going to jail.
There's no insurance to really cover that in most situations.
Right.
Like for the person who actually did it. And two, the people who are doing it, they don't have any assets to do it. So going after those people is a very rare circumstance.
Which is what confused me when I first did my first show on this topic.
Right. So you want, I mean, it's our job as lawyers to find where can we find the insurance money because that's where the money is really going to come from. And then at the same time, depending on how egregious the failures are of the security company, if that's a big security company, they have some money, they may end up having to pay some of their own money involved in that. But at the end of the day, you want to look for a company who has the insurance because that's where the money's coming from. And that's why these companies buy insurance, to protect themselves from when these sort of incidents happen.
Thomas, if a bartender or a restaurant server was sexually assaulted on the job, forget the third party element, is that workers' compensation?
Yeah. I mean, so the one thing you can see a sneaky carrier trying to do is say there's some kind of personal animus there. So personal animus would bring you outside of workers' comp. I think it's very risky to do in that situation because if it's not workers' comp, it might be a third party claim. And that could expose them to a lot more liability as opposed to workers' comp that pays generally wage loss and medical expenses. But yeah, I would say that's generally going to be workers' comp.
Let's do this. Let's take a quick break. We'll have more from the McManaman and Wing Show and our guest, Matt Solomon, in just a minute.
Battles aren't won solely on the field. That's a common misconception. Battles are won within. Over enemies of fear, enemies of doubt. In that place where promises are kept. Promises to oneself.
This is a physical training event.
Promises to one's community.
Healthy people move debris out of their house.
Promises to one's country. In the heart of every Marine, you'll find a promise. A promise forever kept. A promise of battles won.
My name is Corporal Bradley Joseph Seitz.
Jerry Reed.
Kate Weber.
These are real veterans facing a real challenge.
I have PTSD.
And I have PTSD.
I have PTSD.
Post-traumatic stress disorder can happen to anyone.
I was still in a war zone in my mind.
But treatment can turn your life around.
Treatment has really saved my life.
To learn about PTSD and how treatment can help you, call your local VA medical center or visit ptsd.va.gov.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the McManaman and Wing Show here on WWDB Talk 860. Shout out to Togger, our producer, for making it happen. We also have another producer who's our producer in the house here, our photographer. Do we have a name and a company?
It seems very easy to remember because we have Matt as our guest and Matt is our executive producer today.
And Matt, what's the name of the company? Matt Dees Video. Yep. Shout out to Matt Dees Video. I can tell you from personal experience, I get your TikToks and they're fantastic. So, you know, hopefully you get some business there because you damn deserve it. So let's talk a little, Matt Solomon. Let's talk a little bit auto accidents.
A little bit lighter subject.
Little lighter, right. So I'm going to start off by saying you don't have to worry about me. I have full coverage, Matt. So we're good. Whatever that means, by the way. You've never heard that before, right?
No, never heard that before. Full coverage doesn't really cover you at all.
Exactly. You're talking about the body of the car. Let's talk about, you know, it all starts with the auto insurance, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And so what in Philly and in Jersey, don't we know, aren't we getting educated with? And of course, when I watch the Sixers, and I don't want to talk about that one, I don't watch them as much as my brother, but damn, if I did, last night would have been painful. At the end of each game or after the Phillies, you know, I love getting my auto advice from Tyrese Maxey or Kyle Schwarber because, hey, you know, they're giving me the whole scoop. I'm not getting educated on bodily harm stuff in those commercials. What should people know?
You should always buy as much coverage as you can afford, not based upon you saving some money from a person telling you on TV. And the reason I say that is because, especially in the area that we live here in Philadelphia, there are thousands of accidents daily. And the amount of people who don't have enough coverage on their vehicle will cause you to spend more money out of your pocket. You want to make sure you have the most coverage you can get. And what does that mean? So for those of people who live in Pennsylvania, you want to make sure that you have uninsured and underinsured coverage on your vehicle. That means if someone rear-ends you and they don't have any car insurance to pay for your injuries, that means you can go to your policy and get uninsured coverage on your policy. You can get up to the maximum amount that you purchase. Now, what if the person who hit you has insurance, but it's not enough coverage? Well, then if you have purchased underinsured coverage, you can go to your own policy to get that money to cover for your injuries. Now, here's a little caveat to that. People hear full coverage and they think, oh, I'm totally covered. Well, that's not always necessarily the case. The biggest thing we have in Pennsylvania is called limited tort and full tort. That means when you're on the phone with the insurance agent with the mascot and they say to you, hey, would you like to save some money? And you're like, oh, of course I want to save money. What they're doing is saying, oh, well, you just signed for what's called limited tort. You'll be able to get some money. You'll get all your bills paid. Well, that's not always the case. What happens is when you get limited tort, you are telling an insurance company that you are agreeing that you will only sue for serious or permanent injuries. And in many cases, these insurance companies view limited tort people as not suffering any injury whatsoever. And we have to file a lot more lawsuits for people who have limited tort.
Even when there's a serious injury, right?
Even when there's a serious injury. I've had clients with broken bones and they said, it's not serious enough.
Well, and by the way, that's the pitch you get from an insurance broker. Well, if you're hurt enough, you'll breach the threshold.
Correct. You should have full tort on your policy. It means you can bring a claim against anybody for no matter what your injury is, how serious or insignificant it is. If you get hit by a car and you have a full tort policy and you have some back sprain, you go for a month, 6 weeks to get some physical therapy, you can get money for your injuries. If you had saved, you know, $200 on your policy over a year and you got limited tort, you just threw out a couple $1,000 in that instance. You wouldn't be able to recover.
I mean, I think what people should know is if you have to sign a form to give up this right, obviously the legislature has decided it's a significant right you're giving up and you have to sign a form to give up your right to sue.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Well, it's also what's really amazing also is people try to get the insurance, they're trying to buy their insurance online, okay, and they're not getting educated. Tom, that's a great point. And you also want to know why you're not getting educated. Like what I love about these shows is we're advocating on behalf of individuals that just don't know. How many people don't know when they walk into your office exactly what insurance they have?
90%.
Okay.
Absolutely.
From doing these shows, and I'm telling you, for a couple of years, I was like, you know, I wonder what I have, right? I finally, you know, called my guy and he had me pretty good, but, you know, I automatically picked up everything, right? Because I'm thinking the irony I have being as big an advocate as I am for education and informing people. And if I got an accident, right, it would be terrible. But people who are trying to sign up online, okay, they're likely, where's that, all that information in a small print?
Right. A lot of the information's in a small print, or it just comes at you really quickly on like a DocuSign form or something like that. But one thing that people really need to do is, one, go to a broker. And I'm not advocating for any specific insurance broker, sure, but these insurance brokers are the best places where you're actually going to save money. Because an insurance agent who writes who brings in policies for multiple companies, they'll be able to look at six different companies to get you the best rate if that's what you really care about. The other thing is, it's really important.
What about an insurance broker that works for one company?
I always say go to an insurance broker that goes for many companies because they want to write people to their company only. There's a couple insurance companies that you only can go to
right.
their own broker for that company. Shop around. You should always shop around. You mean everyone shops around for the best deals on Amazon every day, but are they going to shop? They don't do that for their car insurance.
And all insurance companies are not the same. I always tell people when people ask me, call your local personal injury lawyer. Ask them the insurers they are most furious with on a daily basis. I guarantee you, any personal injury lawyer you call is going to have a list of three or four carriers that they would never do business with.
Is it the same in workers' comp? In other words, I mean, how does that?
Yeah, I mean, there are carriers that are obnoxious. Although in workers' comp, generally it's the self-insureds. So when they get to file a certificate and have a special bank account of their own money put to the side, they're very cheap with it. They don't want to take care of injured workers. So I deal with that with self-insureds.
And typically, are they like huge companies?
A lot of times they are.
What are the, by the way, I got a text from Mike Murphy, okay? He's a good friend, and he's listening to the broadcast. And he gave an example, you talk about, of a third-party case, where a road rage case, a guy followed onto a SEPTA property, assaulted. It was assaulted. SEPTA just paid out. I guess somebody got assaulted on a SEPTA property where there wasn't security, and there was a lawsuit. And so it turned out to be a third party case. So we appreciate that. It's a couple minutes back, but I just
It's an interesting fact pattern, though. I'd be interested if you can get the citation from him. I'd like to read the case.
I will. And so when I think about workers' compensation, okay, you talk about self-insured compared to, is it typically the big companies and do typically the big companies, do they know the rule? Like, so for example, when you get injured on a work injury, the employer's required to have, a letter of acknowledgement, and you have to have the listing and all that. Are those self-insured companies typically up on that more than the smaller companies? Or,
well, so what you're talking about is the rights and the duties in the panel list.
Yeah.
I find, as a general rule, most employers screw that up. They violate one of those rules in almost every case. There are a couple of employers who are actually quite good at it, and I actually credit their defense lawyers that they use all the time, because it's very clear they are counseling their clients effectively. But for the most part, carriers, and particularly large self-insureds, ones that are nationwide, for example, they're terrible. They never have the right paperwork. They don't file the notices on time. They're just doing whatever the adjuster that's in, Houston thinks is the right thing to do. They have no idea what the rules are.
How many people who get assaulted, or doesn't mean assaulted, but let's talk about auto accidents what shouldn't they do on at the point of an accident, Matt?
At the point of an accident, don't get in a fight with somebody at the scene of an accident. I can't tell you the amount of times I've seen that. But what you should be doing and you shouldn't be doing, pictures. So many, as more many pictures as you can take them. Your car, other car, license plates, people's information, whatever you can take pictures of, document as much as possible. The other thing you shouldn't be doing at the scene of an accident, if you are feeling any pain whatsoever, don't make your first call to an insurance company. Get yourself to the hospital, get yourself to an urgent care, get checked out first. Give a lawyer a call and you then call your insurance
and get
company.
Educated. How often in both your worlds does somebody get, unless it's a catastrophic, an obvious catastrophic injury? Okay, I know the answer to this question, but I'd like to ask why. You know, at a work injury, or you know, an auto accident, how often do a lot of individuals, you know, they'll either go to the doctor, or they'll talk to their boss, or they'll, you know, talk to their claims adjuster, and they may not feel the full extent of the pain when it actually happens.
You know, it's funny you say that. I know where you're going with this, yeah, about toughing it out, but I was going to piggyback on to what Matt said, which goes,
people try to tough it out unnecessarily. Right.
But what a lot of times will happen, if you call that insurance adjuster from the scene or on your way to the ER, every once in a while, well, not every once in a while, routinely, you get the statement that was recorded by that insurance adjuster that says, I'm fine, because they don't know yet. You know, sometimes musculoskeletal things take a day or two to really set in when all the swelling kicks in and you haven't had any diagnostics. You have no idea what's going on. And routinely, those statements can be used against somebody. It happens in workers' comp. It happens in personal injury. And so we routinely tell people, don't tough it out. Get checked out by a doctor right away and document as much as you can.
Yeah. Well, and medical is a big part, obviously, of individuals staying on top of their injury when it comes to a personal injury case, auto accident. And that's where I was, and a work injury, that's where I was going with it. In other words, making statements before you really have a clue of what's going on. I said this a million times. My wife, if you met her, she's got a scar right across her neck. We got the, you thought of a fender bender. A year later, this thing had, it was fine for a week or two till she kept getting a pinched nerve. Next thing you know, the disc exploded. We had no idea.
Right. I mean, injuries take, as Tom just said, some injuries can take a day or 2 days to really develop. I mean, especially with head injuries, you may feel initially, you may have a headache or feel a little loopy or drowsy. And as the days or weeks develop, you can start having memory issues, ringing in your ears, sensitivity to light, tons and tons of issues. It makes the injuries are more, way more serious than they normally were.
And does that routinely happen in a work injury also?
I see it all the time. Guy gets hurt on a Friday, toughs it out over the weekend, doesn't say anything till he goes into the office on Monday, and it's always a problem in the claim.
Yeah, they don't give you a trophy for it, right? Like for sucking it up?
No, they routinely will give you a denial.
And to me, it's inhuman. Matt, any? I want to make sure we cover, you know, when it comes to the auto insurance, because it's the life's blood of somebody's rights. Okay, want to make sure we don't miss anything before. I mean, notice, you know, we're not going to answer every question, but is there anything else you want to elaborate on?
Something that has been happening more recently over the last couple of years are clients coming into their office with what they think is real car insurance. And they'll pay some amount of money when they first purchase their car, whether from a lot or when they originally bought the car from some guy down the street. They will think that they actually purchased insurance. And it's usually one or two companies that are always on these insurance declarations. They've actually really purchased fake insurance.
Wow.
And they're not actually paying an agent. They're cash apping somebody. They're Zelling somebody for the insurance who they think is an agent.
There's scams everywhere.
They're getting scammed when they purchase the car. So when you're buying a car, you have to have insurance when you leave that lot. You have to call a company. Call up. If you really want to go to an insurance company, buy a website, make sure you actually purchase the insurance through the company or go to an agent.
Will you review a client's insurance policy?
Always. We will always take a look at of a client's insurance policy. Absolutely.
Fantastic. Okay, so how much time do we have, Tyler? All right, we got a couple minutes left. Let's do this. Contact information, Matt, if somebody wants to get in touch, including website, numbers. Sure.
Our office phone number is 215-561-0877. And our website is Dion, D-I-O-N, Solomon, S-O-L-O-M-O-N.com.
Awesome. And of course, our host, Tom Wink. Anybody wants to get in touch?
Sure. You can go follow me on TikTok, at THWESQ. Our website is workerscompadvocates.com.
And having said that, a little shout out. We talk about Roger McMenamin, you know, good man. And you know, what's important is that people get educated on their rights. Okay. And when you get injured in a car accident, or you know, you deal with a lot of different situations. Don't make any hasty decisions. Okay, that's what, you know, when I think about people, and you know, how often do you hear the well, I don't want to make any waves, and then next thing you know, they're tied up in a pretzel, they can't move, and they forego their rights.
That's right. That happens all the time.
And the same with you, Tom. In a work injury, it's, you know, closing words for anybody that has one.
I was going to say, whether you get hurt at work or you have an auto accident or something like that, the best thing you can do for yourself, even if you don't plan on pursuing anything right now, take a bunch of pictures, get the documentation, get checked out by a doctor. You'll be happy you did.
Awesome. And get your rights. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the Men and Men and Wings show here on WWDB Talk 860. We want to thank our guest, Matt Solomon, Dion Solomon and Shapir, and of course, our host, Tom Wing of McManaman and Wing. And shout out to Matt, Matt Dietz, our photographer and video guy. And of course, shout out to Tyler on behalf of everybody here in the studio. I'm Joe Dougherty. Thanks for listening, everybody.